I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Rajiv Chowdhury. Rajiv is the founder and director of Pathshala Learning Solutions in India. Rajiv has over 20 years of experience spanning hospitality, travel, telecom, and business process outsourcing industries. He has held senior leadership positions in organizations such as Hutchison Global Services, Virgin Mobile, Reliance, and Convergys. Rajiv has been directly responsible for designing, developing, and implementing managerial excellence programs, performance management systems, customer experience frameworks, attrition management programs in the organizations that he has worked with. Rajiv, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, David, and thank you very much for the opportunity and looking forward to the conversation.
So Rajiv, you have a fascinating background and a lot of experience. Tell us a little bit about some of the specifics involved in your background, and particularly how it led you to do what you're doing today with Pathshala Learning Solutions.
Okay. So interestingly, what I'm doing right now is largely training and development, more in terms of the frontline development, team leader development, management development programs, etc. But that's what I've been doing for the last 2 years. But what I'm doing right now is actually following my passion. And it stems from the last almost 20 years of hard operational experience. I've primarily been an operations person, whether it was in hospitality or it was in BPO or in telecom. And I've actually handled customer services programs. I've handled sales roles. I've handled customer retention roles, very, very target number-driven roles. And at some point of time, I felt that, through my journey, I also had a lot of experience of working with youngsters, training people, etc. And over a period of time, I realized that that's where my true passion lies, helping others develop and helping others, helping others actually exploit the maximum potential that and reach their potential, to say the least, you know. So that's what's been motivating me, and that's what's brought me to this stage where I now actually founded an organization called Pathshala Learning Solutions, where we focus on training and development and working at the grassroots level.
And in particular, does the training that you're working on involve customer service and sales, or does it involve other areas as well?
It actually involves a whole lot of other areas. The work that we are doing, we are definitely working with customer services and sales. But a lot of our training also involves in people development, competency framework development, competency development in people, emotional connect, getting the right behaviors in place. Very largely, we do a lot of work specifically in the values and behavior space. Get the right value systems, get the right behaviors in place that will support the organization and the organization goals.
And when you say the right behaviors, what does that mean?
Right. So the philosophy that I started Pathshala with and we as an organization follow is every organization is looking for a particular outcome. It could be a financial outcome. It always is a financial outcome. Apart from a financial outcome, the organization would be looking at certain customer services outcomes, people outcomes in terms of engagement, etc., for which they all need to follow certain processes. And when I say processes, there are organization processes and systems which support the outcome, but the key element are the people. It's the people who have to execute those systems and processes. And a lot of time, when an organization finds there's a gap or there's possibly a roadblock, they start treating the symptoms. When I say the symptoms, they start working with the systems and the processes, and they start working with the skills. But a very important element is always forgotten. It is the people and the belief that they have in the system in the first place, the belief that they have in the outcome, the belief that they have in the leadership. And with that beliefs comes out certain behaviors. Now, if that behavior is not putting in 100% of their efforts, if that behavior is counterproductive to what the organization is aiming at, those are the areas that we look at working. First, establishing the belief in the system, the processes, the organization, the outcome that the organization is seeking, and what are those behaviors that will drive to that?
It's really interesting because this area around beliefs and behaviors is a place where we see companies getting stuck time and again. And you're right, they often will treat the symptoms first and think about the beliefs and the behaviors later.
Absolutely. In fact, let me give you an example. Any customer-facing organization which has got a large people force, a large team, when they work with large teams, think about what happens there. They identify a problem, and if it's a system-related problem or if it's a process-related problem, that's very simple. I mean, there are enough tools and there are enough new technologies that are coming into place to fix it. The minute they start looking at a people-related problem, they try and evaluate it from a perspective, whether is it a skill-related issue or is it a behavior-related issue? And then they immediately try and look for interventions. And you send the person into a training and you pull the person out. And today, pulling a person out for an entire day of training is a lot of cost. But you pull that person out for training, you send him for the training, and then you expect him to come back and do wonders. But not much time is actually spent trying to understand the cause. If there was a particular behavior being displayed, why was that being displayed in the first place? If a particular skill is not being displayed, what is the initiative that the individual has taken in terms of developing the skills? Because the fact of the matter is, the person knows that he possibly lacks a skill. But what is the initiative that person is displayed towards acquiring that skill or maybe honing that skill? That element is often missed. You go through a 360, you go through the complete performance management system, you do a competency analysis, etc., etc., and then you identify that, okay, here's a guy, he could be our top talent, and we want to groom this person in. Or this could be a bottom performer, and we want to improve that person in. And then you thrust that person into the training. But if you've not really spent any time working on his belief system, then he's either going in for the training out of sheer compulsion, or possibly he's going in for the training with a sense of hope, but the belief is still not in place. The belief in the outcome that the organization is seeking, or the belief that, and then most important thing that much most common most people miss, is the fact that what's in it for me? That he is definitely going to gain from this. And that work is missing. And that's a work which is very, very critical.
Rajib, can you give us an example of a case where you have seen this kind of situation and you've seen the turnaround where you start to work on the behavior rather than on the symptoms?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Let me give you a direct example in one of my previous organizations where I was handling a customer retention role. And obviously, customer retention is a big challenge now because it's general knowledge. Retaining a customer is going to cost us that much more lesser than acquiring a new one.
That's
And
right.
this is in the telecom space. So obviously, there's always a number challenge. I mean, you really want that many more subscribers on your network. So we were obviously looking at increasing our retention rates. And typically, the approach was always typically a number-driven approach. A number-driven approach being, okay, we need more customers to stay back, throw in more incentives to the people, ensure that they hold the customers back, and then they gain more incentives. So what do you think happened? I mean, we saw an amazing range of negative behaviors come through because we threw in money. We were throwing incentives at people. People were looking at the incentives, and then they realized that, okay, the only way they could make the incentive is they get customers to stay back, come what may. You can imagine what would have happened to you as a customer when you were on the other side of the phone. When you're desperately trying to get out, or you have some reason as to why you want to leave, and then there's a chap on the other end who just doesn't want to listen and he wants to just hold you back. I don't know if you've had that experience, but if you've had, then you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yes, I've had that
And
experience.
yeah. So And that's when I actually was brought in, and I took over this function. And I was told that we've got to turn this around. And I started listening into a few calls. I actually couldn't get past five. I said, okay, if this is how the calls are happening, I'm surprised that we've not got sued yet. And the easiest thing would have been to actually call in the managers, call in the people, and do the entire command and rule stuff. But that would have only solved the problem for a few days. It wouldn't have really solved the cause. So I actually took some time to understand what's happening. Then I realized that all our structure, the behaviors were driven by, in this particular case, the systems and processes that we had implemented. But the fact of the matter that remains is that retention is best ensured by ensuring absolutely fantastic customer service, or for that matter, even looking at building a relationship with the customer. A customer may have genuine reasons to go. In such a case, let him go. If he wants to come back, he will definitely come back. But if the customer is just exploring, you can actually get the customers to stay by building a relationship. So I launched a retention through relationship program. We didn't really do much. In terms of the systems and the processes, we just aligned it more towards the retention happening the right way. We made customer services very, very important. But with people, we invested a lot. We did a full-fledged program, which we started working with their belief level. We got them to start thinking like customers, got them to start imagining when they were customers, what was happening, what is it that they're expecting. First, looked at building the foundation that real retention can only happen if your relationship is in place. Then bought in that, okay, using that positive note, how can we actually improve our existing numbers? How can we improve our existing churn rates? How can we improve our existing retention rates? How can we improve our existing margins? And all of that on the basis of maintaining an extremely strong customer relationship. That year, we actually did 125% of our target. Not just that, we returned back £500,000 back to the organization in terms of sheer savings, purely by working on the belief in people.
Really, that's remarkable. How much time does it take to work on changing the behavior around customer service and building those relationships versus working on just treating the symptom and trying to deal with the customer as the customer is trying to break the relationship with
So
the
it's,
company?
yeah, so ideally, I mean, it obviously depends on the scale of the organization, but typically speaking, if we are trying to bring about a culture change, and if the culture is more aligned towards a hard number driven and less of customer experience, the journey will take anywhere between 6 to 9 months. It's achievable, but it takes a lot of perseverance, and necessarily the journey must be driven from the top. So the leaders will have to display those behaviors. The leaders will actually have to walk the talk for the people down the line to believe that, yes, customer relationship is important. We can get customers to stay back. We can drive numbers. We can drive sales through the right, through service. But they will believe if the leaders display that behavior.
So, what are some of the roadblocks in trying to get the people at the top, the top leaders in the company, to accept this behavior change as the primary method for achieving greater success for the company?
So I personally feel there are three elements to it. One, of course, is something that I call the legacy element, which is something that's worked for me always, and it's something that will continue to work. A lot of people, especially in the sales environment, they come in from an extremely hard sales background where possibly brute forces work for them, and they retain those behaviors. And that becomes a big shift for them because it's the more senior you get, the older you get, unfortunately, especially in the corporate space, more rigid you get. So letting go of certain behaviors there is also a letting go of a lot of comfort zone. A lot of there's a lot of insecurity involved in that. So that becomes one big challenge if that's the background that the person is carrying. That is one. Second problem, which I personally feel, which I've also observed a lot, is there seems to be a complete disconnect with the values that the organization is trying to drive versus your own personal values. Or maybe there's no alignment there. And the value system of the organization may say customer centricity. But the leader may be more concerned about driving a particular number. So because he has not made the effort to understand what is the organization value system and what is it that the organization is trying to say when they've got a particular value up. And but the leader looks at his own specific goal, then there is a problem. Then there is a big problem. And third is very simple. Third, when at a leadership level, driving a number and across the leadership level, if the common consensus is driving a number, it's obviously going to always drive a poor behavior. When there's no balance, what I mean.
Having numbers drive poor behavior sounds like a furthering of what you talked about with regard to values. If the values are solid and there's a belief that values will help perpetuate greater success, then there needs to be an implicit understanding that it's not just numbers.
Absolutely. So I'd like to possibly correct myself here. Numbers don't alone drive the wrong behaviors. Numbers are important for any organization to succeed or to sustain. But when the numbers are not anchored to an organization value, or they're not anchored to the values that the organization stands for, that is when the problem happens. So it's extremely important that whatever number we are looking at driving, it needs to be anchored. It needs to have a very firm anchor. And that
Over is high. What are some of the questions I should be asking myself that I so that I examine what I need to do to change the situation?
situation.
Okay. So one of the first questions that I think I would ask is, obviously, there is the entire root cause analysis to understand what is leading to the churn, how much of it is external factors, and how much of it is internal factors. For a minute, let's focus only on the internal factors. If people are leaving me, then there is something that they don't believe in what I'm offering. Now, what is that? What is it that is missing from my offering that because of which people are actually choosing to walk away? One. Number two. What are my values? What are my organization values? And what are the behaviors that are being driven within the organization? Is there a synergy in the organization values that we have set for the organization and the behaviors that we as leaders are driving within the organization? If there is a mismatch, there is definitely a problem. Third, how much do the people on the ground or the staff, how much do they really believe in my organization values? How much do they believe in the leadership's capability? How much do they actually believe in their immediate supervisors? Or how much do they trust in their immediate supervisors? These are some very difficult, hard questions that I would have to ask myself.
It's like Simon Sinek talks about knowing your why. What's the purpose, cause, or belief that inspires you to do what you do?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, it's a most common saying. Everybody knows that the people don't leave organizations, people leave bosses. That's reality. And when you see a very high churn happening at an absolute ground level, the first things first is you have to start looking at what are the behaviors at the immediate supervisor level and then the next level that are being displayed. And if there are some gaps in the behaviors that are being displayed by the immediate supervisor and the managerial level, then it's not because it starts there. That's only the tip of the iceberg. If you scale it back, then there is obviously something that we are doing as leaders that's driving those behaviors. So the buck finally will stop with us at the leaders. I've actually seen enough organizations which, including some that I've worked in, where we've seen a high amount of churn and we've seen leaders get into the room and have walked out very comfortably by laying the blame on immediately the team leaders. Hey, we need to do a team leader development program, or we have such a high attrition because the team leaders are bad. Really? Well, if I think about it, and if I really think about it, those guys are team leaders because either I have hired them or I've promoted them. Funny, when I actually hired them, they were good. When I promoted them, they were stars. Suddenly, they seem to have turned bad. Not making sense, is it?
No.
So it's extremely important that the question finally should not be with who is causing the problem. The question is, why is the problem happening? What is it that we are doing as leaders that is leading to this problem? It has to start with me as a leader first.
Rajib, what have been some of your biggest successes trying to tackle these behavioral issues?
All right. So in my one of my previous roles, I was also the center director for a center in Pune. We also had a center in Bombay, another city, just about 4 hours away, but culturally extremely, extremely different. And while Mumbai as a city, a very cosmopolitan city, extremely target driven, very, very, people work in pressure situations, they're very comfortable working in pressure situations, et cetera, et cetera. Pune comparatively is far more laid back. It's more emotional as a city. One of the things, and Pune as a center was set up after Bombay was already successful and running. We had 7,000 people in Bombay, and Pune was set up as a backup, as a disaster recovery site. It just grew to become 3,500 people center. But what we realized is that Pune was facing a lot of attrition. The entire objective of setting up a center in Pune was that we assumed that in Pune is a smaller city, so people would be happy to get a job with us. We were one of the highest paymasters, and we would see far lower attrition. But that was not the case. We were actually seeing higher attrition as compared to Mumbai. So that's when obviously we went through the entire cycle, and the example that I was giving you about getting into a room and seeing the team leaders are bad, I've been through this. And honestly, somewhere even I've been a part of this meeting, and even where I've been a part of the entire process. Then we realized that no, not right. We actually had external intervention in form of coaches and trainers who came in and worked with us, and they helped us start looking at things from a different perspective. They actually helped us in a way where we could start questioning ourselves, and we started asking some really hard questions to ourselves, really, really uncomfortable questions. And we realized that the problem was not with our immediate supervisors. What did we do? We actually picked up good agents from the floors in Bombay, and we put them up as supervisors and managers, and we put them on the floor in Pune. They came in from an environment which was very largely target-driven, high pressure, more aggressive as an environment. They came in with those behaviors, and they started displaying those behaviors on a set of people who operate at a higher emotional level. And then we started looking at what are the processes that we are following that will support. And we realized that the processes that we are following, we had just picked up Bombay as a model and implemented that in Pune. Big mistake. Even us as managers, when we would get our leaders, when we would get into reviews, we bought in the same attitude, we bought in the same behaviors. It was only causing pressure to the people down the line, one level below, and then it was obviously becoming a cascading pressure all the way down. We corrected it by first getting into an appreciative inquiry program. We identified what are the strengths that we have as a team. What are the strengths that we have as a center? We actually got all departments working together, and there were a lot of local people. And we identified those. We created a vision for ourselves. While the organization values were there, we took the organization values as an anchor, and we created a subset of that in terms of a vision and a subset of values for the Pune site. And then each one of us as leaders, we held ourselves accountable to display the right behavior supporting those values. And obviously, we ran a complete program with all the managers in terms of getting their belief systems in place, getting them upskilled in terms of what would be the right behaviors to display, what would be the right managerial skills or coaching skills to display. But supporting those where we worked deeply on the belief system and supporting those belief systems and behaviors displayed by us as leaders. That changed it completely. And a center which was saying some about 62% as an attrition annualized came down to about
34% as in annualized attrition. A massive shift, and it stayed there. That's where it stayed. And of course, 36% annualized from different industries may seem like a large number, but in the BPO world, it's a very decent number to be.
What kinds of triggers do companies have when they come to talk to you?
A lot of it is they're looking for a culture transformation, whether it is in terms of, for example, the IT client that we're working on has been on a growth path for the last 7-8 years. They've been growing very aggressively. And now is the time when they're stabilizing and they're consolidating. And it is important for them now that now when they're stabilizing and they're consolidating, obviously the vertical growths, the quick growth in the organization is going to come down. And it's very important for people to now who've been used to very quick promotions to understand that promotions are not the only growth medium that you start looking at. So at this point of time, the stickiness factor has to be to do with the organization values, the organization beliefs, to hold them together. So that's one culture transformation. That's when that we're doing an extensive amount of work there. There was a need, there were organizations come to us when there is a need to create an emotional connect between the floor and the immediate managers. We're working extensively on sales programs. So they're looking for a sales transformation and in the same lines that I spoke about previously. So that's the other area. Customer service transformation, for example, getting that culture in, or sales through service culture in, that's when we do a lot of work.
Interesting. Do you see now, currently that there's more and more outsourcing going on in business in general, and we're seeing it in smaller organizations, that there's much more opportunity to get functions done through outsourcing as opposed to hiring permanent staff? There are all kinds of cultural issues that surround outsourcing versus internal staff, and particularly with globalization, you have lots of people who work together who never see one another face-to-face. How do you see this whole issue of behavior and belief systems playing into the outsourcing market?
So there are two elements, of course. I think the first part of it, of course, is with especially the outsourcing happening and fragmented teams across the world, the value plays a very, very important role here. Because the common stickiness factor, irrespective of where you're situated, which part of the world you're situated, the common thing that's the common platform or the common anchor that you have as an organization is the organization values. And supporting the organization values are the beliefs that, or the behaviors that the organization defines as acceptable, defines as something that you actually are expected to display, et cetera, et cetera. Because values are a framework. Values actually provide a framework. They tell you what you can do. They're not rules which tell you what you can't do, et cetera, et cetera. They form a framework within which you can work. And that framework applies to people irrespective of where they are. So that's the most important element, I think. It's very important to establish, especially if you're going to work in a fragmented or if you're going to work in a decentralized operation.
Interesting. Rajib, what are some of the things that you're working on now that you're most excited about?
So one is, of course, values and beliefs cascade with one of our clients. We're using cafe style as a methodology there. So extremely excited about it. We're using cafe style as a methodology with a sales program. And that's, again, we're looking at culture transformation there in a sales program. That's the other project, which is something that I'm very excited about. And third, of course, is a project that we're working on. So Pathshala, as a training organization, we work with both an education side and the corporate side. The third project that I'm personally working on is to take the cafe style methodology onto the schools, and the secondary school and the higher secondary. And while the schools very largely, at least in India, largely focus on building capability, we are looking at using the cafe style modules to start building character. So whether it is in form of within curriculum programs or after school programs, the objective is to make the students global citizens. So get the values and the beliefs in place, get the right competencies in place, and to get the right skills in place to actually make them a global citizen.
And could you just describe briefly what the cafe style is?
So cafe style actually is one of the most innovative experiential methodologies that I've ever come across. It's built on the back of a lot of neuroscience and NLP related activities. They're 15, 20-minute activities. They're all activity-based learning modules. It takes 15, 20 minutes to deliver any one of them. The best part of it is you walk away with absolutely tangible learnings and outcomes from those activities.
Fascinating. Rajib, unfortunately, we're coming close to the end of our interview. We believe that one of the most vital elements to smash through any plateau in business or in life is to create a community of complementary people with complementary talents. And that's why we always end our interviews with this question: who do you know personally that is currently doing work you're especially excited about? And why?
Okay, the one person who really excites me is Fee Haywood. She is one of the co-founders and CEO of Cafe Style Speed Training. She's the one who's come out with, she and Alan Jones are the two people who've come out with the Cafe Style activities. They're absolutely brilliant because they are motivating for across the spectrum. So you could be the CEO of an organization, or you could be a child in a school. And I could actually run the same activity with amazing results across the board with both of them. And the best part about the activity is I could actually run the activity in a group of CEOs and they walk away with tangible learnings. I can run the activity at various levels of the management and also the frontline staff of an organization, and they could walk away with tangible learnings. I could do the same in middle and junior schools. But I could actually get somebody from a school in a group of CEOs, some kids from schools and group of CEOs, and run the same activity. And each one of them will actually walk away from there with a learning. It's amazing.
And I'm pleased to say that Fee Haywood is another guest on this podcast, Smashing the Plateau. So
I'm glad.
thank you for sharing that. Rajib, how can our listeners contact you?
So Pathshala, my website is www.pathshala.biz. I'm available on LinkedIn. My email ID is available again on LinkedIn. So for any questions, I'll be happy to respond if they drop me a mail. My contact details are all available on LinkedIn.
Okay, terrific. So we will include that in the show notes so people have that information.
Great, that'll be nice.
Rajib, thank you for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest has been Rajib Chowdhury, who is the founder and director of Pathshala Learning Solutions in India. Thank you again, Rajib, for joining us.
Thank you very much, David, for the opportunity.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.